session number 10601, Rule 6.
Mr. Cottier, Reel 5. Can you tell me who was actually responsible for teaching you here?
No one in particular, it was just your colleagues when they had time available, when they weren't on duty.
It's other regimental policemen?
Other regimental policemen, yes. They would go down to them T-shirts and get the bike out and bring it on the barrack square for you. Then you go onto the bike and you just rode back and forth up and down the barrack square on such times as you had reasonable control. And of course, when they thought that you could go outside onto the roads, they would take you with them when they went on Heath Patrol. You see? You just followed them to Bagshot and Bisley, those places, looking for Heath fires. And that was part of your training. You learnt the area, you learnt the routes. At the same time, you're improving on your driving skills.
Did you have to take a test?
Yes. The MTO took you on the test.
MTO?
Yes. Motor Transport Officer. He took you on for a driving test. He took you through walking. He rode behind any vehicle. He watched you, give you a route to travel, because we knew walking very well by then. He would tell you which way to go, and he used to ride behind in an army vehicle watching you. And pretty simple, straightforward test.
You managed to pass it the first time?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Then, of course, you had the vehicle. Well, the same procedure was the same. They would fetch the 1500 weight on the barrack square and you reversed it and turned it and until they thought you were okay. Then you went out under the ridges, Chum Ridges, for your test there, because there you get hill starts, you see, whereas you didn't with the motorbike. So they would take you under the ridges where it's rather steep. Ask you to stop and then start on a hill start, you see. That's the only difference. But again, the MTO went with you. Captain Hutton, I think it was. Again, it was something similar. It wasn't really anything difficult.
When you passed your motorbike test, were you then responsible for a specific machine, or did you just use any machine?
No, the machine was assigned to you. You had to look after it and maintain it. You know, like sort of preliminary maintenance, clean the carburetor and clean the points. And you had what we call a logbook, daily maintenance task, they called it. Each day you did a little something, and over a period of a month, you'd completed everything, you see. And as for anything more than that, you had the workshops, you had proper experienced fitters. For anything more than that, you just took your bike in, explained to them what was wrong, that the clutch was slipping. Probably want new clutch plates, you know, the thing that they did all that.
What did you feel about having your own motorbike?
You felt great. You felt you were somebody. And of course, you were the envy of the average soldier, so. Seen you come along on a motorbike all dressed up, you know, gauntlets and goggles and everything, and you felt supreme.
Could you use that motorbike for any part of your sort of time off? Could you take it out?
Oh, no. No, it had to be authorised. All journeys had to be authorised. You had this work ticket. For instance, when you went on Heath Fire patrols, before you went on the patrol, you had to go down to the MT office, tell the MTO that you'd been assigned to Heath Fire patrol. Could you have a work ticket? And he filled the work ticket in. You know, which authorised you to draw petrol. Then, if you were stopped by anyone at all, this was a sort of a guarantee that you were a bona fide owner of that bike and you were on authorised duties, you see. There was emergencies sometimes cropped up when you just got the bike out. I wouldn't say emergencies, but there's one occasion when the adjutant wanted a message taken to Kimberley. You see? And he came across with this envelope. I once wanted to take this to Kimberley. Well, you say, well, the of course, I was the only one available. And I said to the sergeant, well, what about a work ticket? Oh, he says, it's okay in this case. You know, the adjutant's authorised it more or less, verbally, you see. And that was the only occasion that I went out without a work ticket, an occasion like that. I mean, the adjutant's authorisation was, he's a much more higher man than the MTO.
Was it usual for a regimental policeman to act as messengers?
Oh, yes. That was the thing, really. We were policemen come dispatch riders, but in peacetime there wasn't much dispatch work done, except on training.
Oh, can you tell me about the training you had where you would be involved as dispatch rider?
Well, during the time I was at Woking, I only experienced one period of training, which lasted about 3 days. And what happened there, the battalion marched out, company by company, full packs, rations for the day, and they would march out maybe 10 mile, 20 mile onto the moors to partake in the exercise. Now then they would leave maybe about 8 o'clock in the morning. Now then the colonel, who we were dispatch riders to, wouldn't leave till about maybe 10 o'clock. He'd give them time to get well on the way. And of course we were standing by with our bikes, with gauntlets and sou'westers ready. And when he moved out in his Humber Snipe States car, accompanied by his adjutant and his signal officer and his intelligence officer, when he moved out, we just followed suit, you see. We didn't have much idea where we were going, we just followed him, and we're under his jurisdiction. If he wanted a dispatch rider, he would wave us up, you see. And he would hand us a slip or give us a verbal instruction. And if you remember, the Humber Snipe had a bit of a running board on the side, not like the cars today, it had a bit of a running board. And we used to ride up alongside when we got the signal and put one foot on the running board to keep us a distance at the time we took the message from the colonel, you see. And you looked at the message and complied with what was on, you see. It may be something to the effect to return to Inkerman Barracks, Woking, with their instructions to the quartermaster to bring out extra rations or something like that, you know.
When you were on this particular manoeuvre, where were you based?
Well, on this one, it's at Chopham Ridges. It was all moorland, heatherland, open country. And battalion headquarters had what you call a mobile office for occasions such as that, where there was no accommodation to requisition. They had this mobile office. It was a truck converted to an office, you see, and that was the battalion headquarters. So that when they arrived at Chum Cum on the ridges, if you stop, and that would be his headquarters. In the same sense as Monty had a caravan, you see.
So where would you sleep?
Just bivouac, ground sheet and blanket. Well, in the summer, luckily it was in this fine weather. The only thing we suffered was the heavy dew at night time falling. You'd wake up, you know, with your blanket wet. Of course, you were young, you didn't mind. I remember on one occasion where I was that tired because, you see, dispatch riders couldn't get the meals at the same time as the battalion got the meals when the rations came up, because you were probably out on a run, and when you came back everything had locked up and gone. You're saying you were hungry and you're tired, you didn't get the same rest, you know, as they did. Sometimes during the night you had to go out, and well, they were kipping down, And I remember on one occasion, I was dog tired, and I was following the CO, and he got a puncture. And the driver got out, of course. It was night time, to change the wheel, and I just go off the bike, put the bike on the stand, and lay down in the heather, and I fell asleep. When I woke up, no signs of the Kern lorry's staff that had gone. Luckily, it was towards the end of the exercise, you know, and I wasn't required.
Did people notice you'd gone?
Nothing good had been said about it. I was later getting back to base, like, about 2 hours behind the colonel. But Maguire was quite all right about it. I told him I'd fallen asleep. Of course, I suppose, we're all tired. No, there's nothing said about it, nothing done.
You needed to map read?
Yes.
Were you taught to map read?
Yes, you're taught that in your second class certificate of education, map read. And I liked map reading. I liked a problem. I liked a challenge, you know. I think it was great when you were sent to a place, and it would say a six-figure or eight-figure map reference, and you had no idea where it was until you checked your map reference and you got onto the target, you know. It's just like directing a gun onto a target. And you got a great sense of satisfaction of being able to do that just through a six-figure map reference.
You mentioned this certificate, the second certificate of education, second grade one. Did you actually take that whilst you were in the army?
Oh, yes, I took that Fenton Barracks. I took my third and my second.
And the second one contained map reading?
Map reading, yes.
Did you do any further practice of map reading when you were working? Or was this now just putting into application what you'd already learned?
Well, I got better as I went on. As time went on, even right through the war, you become very skilled at map reading. Whereas before, you were just working off the preliminary thing, you know, the picking your way sort of thing. But you developed it to a fine art. I mean, I could read a map just by a small torch, blue glass torches, and I could stop and look at my map and get away again, you know, quickly.
Okay, thank you. Apart from the battalion manoeuvres and the two aspects of training we've covered, can you think of any other training that you did whilst you were working?
Firefighting. The regimental police were responsible for firefighting. We were the firemen. In the event of the alarm, we turned out.
This was the Heath Fire Patrols, which I think you've mentioned already.
No, this is something entirely different. This is if the bugler was given the order to sound the fire alarm, what happened? Everybody assembled on the barrack square. You see? But the police didn't. They went to the fire engine. It was an antiquated thing, very old-fashioned, manually operated. You know, the old pump thing.
The two-man pump.
Yes. A four-wheeled vehicle. I think it held 30 gallons of water or something.
Was it motorised?
No. It was a limber up the centre with a T-piece on for a chap at either side to pull. Then the rest of you pushed it from the back. You see? Very... It must have been there since the day it was a prison. But it served a purpose. We never had to use it for a fire, but we used it plenty on practice. And I remember a funny incident about that. When we finished the practice, we had to dry the horses, you see, otherwise they'd soon rot. Well, to do this, we had a block and tackle fixed away up a height on the clock tower. And we used to get four hoses by the end, the fitting of the housing, brass housing, put a loop round and pull the block and tackle until the full length of the hose was suspended and the water would drain off and they remain there for maybe 3 or 4 days. Then lower them down and roll them up. And one day during this procedure of pulling the hoses up, it took 3 men. You see? Because you've got to have 4 hoses soaking wet to pull them up. One of the guys had let go of the rope to do something else, leaving 2 men to hang on. You see? Well, they just couldn't hold on, and they felt themselves being pulled up to a distance, maybe, I don't know, maybe 6 foot. And it was too late, they had to leave go. Well then, when they left go, you can guess what happened. Down came the hoses on top of the 2 men. It looked like a human heap of spaghetti. But luckily, with the speed it came down, the rope at the top had got fast on the pulley, and the 4 brass fittings had stopped. It was 6 foot from the ground. Otherwise, them 2 men were getting them on top of their heads. But it looked damn funny. These 2 men entangled in these hoses, you know, it looked like a heap of spaghetti. That was another thing we had to do.
Well, that particular exercise, that training, did that just involve taking a thing out and attaching it to hydrants, or did you have to load the limber with water yourself?
No, the engine itself held 30 gallons of water, which kept you going until such times as you found a hydrant and installed the standpipe that kept you going. Once you got the hydrant, standpipe on the hydrant, then your water wasn't longer coming through and you worked off the mains. It was just a temporary effort. The pump business was just a temporary effort.
The hydrants within the...
Yes, well, we knew where they all were, you see. That's part of our training, more or less. You got used to where the hydrants were. You knew exactly when you got to say that a fire was in the canteen, where you knew the hydrant was around the corner. There's one occasion where we did have a practice on the canteen one Sunday afternoon. And it was in the quarters where the girls lived, because the canteen girls in them days lived on the premises. It was a lovely sunny afternoon, and they had the windows open. And what happened? The water went through the windows and swept the bedroom. You know, the chap on the hose, when they put it got the better of him. And he couldn't control it to a point where it just flicked across and went straight through the bedroom window and swiped all the things off the dressing table, you know.
Just an accident,
unforeseeable.
Can I turn now to your free time that you had? How much free time were you given?
Well, on the police, we had a lot of free time. Bear in mind, we worked a 3-shift system, so if you come off at 6 o'clock in the morning, you had all day. You see? If you come off at 2 in the afternoon, you had a Packwell all day again. You see, and so we had plenty of time. We only worked 8 hours. And of course, you got 2 days a week off. You know, maybe you get the Monday, Tuesday off. The next day you get, next week you get the Tuesday, Wednesday off, and Wednesday, Thursday, and so forth, you know, right way through. So you got occasional weekend off. But we were quite prepared to accept that, because we did have plenty of free time.
What did you do with it?
Well, I just went into walking in the evenings, the cinema, dance. That's what all there was to do. Because we weren't really welcome in the canteen, because after all, I was just a private. You see, and it's uncomfortable to go in the canteen, and the alternative was to go down to walking. And of course, when you went out to walking, if you went to a pub, you can bet your life there'd be somebody in, you know, from the regiment. Again, you felt uncomfortable, So I spent most of my time with dancers and pitchers.
Did you go with...
I wasn't really an outgoing type, you know. I was more or less a loner in any case. Time didn't worry us, entertainment didn't worry me. Weekends we should go to Smoky, London, for the weekend, stop the Union Jack Club, because if you finished, we'll say, at 6 o'clock on a Friday morning, and you had the Saturday and Sunday off, that was good as 3 days. Well, we get the train to Smoky and book into the Union Jack Club for the weekend.
What was the Union Jack Club? Was that a services club?
Service club. Army, Navy and Air Force. Quite good. Bed accommodation, good meals.
Did it have any recreation facilities there as well?
No, everything. For them, you had the billiards, tennis, ping pong, things like that, you know. But of course, I used to spend my time going round London, Madame Tussauds and those places. And
you said we went down to the Union Jack. We went down smoking to the Union Jack Club. Who did you go with?
Oh, well, you went with one of the lads. You see, and
this would be one of the other regimental policemen.
Yes, because he'd been there previous. And he knew the haunts. You see where to get to. And that lad called Truman. I used to go with. He was killed. That lad. But that was happening for us. Weekend every now and then. Okay, quite happy with it.
What about home leave?
Yes. I only got one home leave from walking. 7 days. One home leave. Because I wasn't there really long enough walking. About 12 months. And I came home for 7 days. To Ledgate. But I was itching to get back. You know, because the mates you had were working at the pit, you see, and they're working this night shift and things like that.
So you wouldn't see them the day when you were there, in other words?
No. I was ready to go back when my 7 days was up. It was nice to see them, but I was ready to go back.
Can I return to something that you mentioned earlier on? And that is, the in a way, the isolation that your job left you in because of the nature of the job. Why do you think that was? Were you actually advised not to mix with the men who were not policemen, with the other privates?
Well, you weren't advised. It just wasn't there in the offering sort of thing. I felt that if I was to associate with a group of colleagues, I might find myself in a situation one day when I've got to supervise them in a detention or on defaulters. And that wouldn't be a very pleasant thing, having to supervise your own colleagues undergoing detention, you see? Or maybe have to arrest them or charge them on some offence. And I didn't want that to happen, because I was a conscientious type and I had a job and I wanted to be loyal to that job. And I couldn't be loyal to it if I was going to let them off the hook. That was my way of looking at it. But apart from that, I wasn't a very good mix in any case. Right from my childhood days, I was a bit of a loner. And isolation really didn't worry me a great deal. Of course, I was also a bookworm.
Yes, you've mentioned that. Were you able to use the facilities of Woking to pursue that interest?
Yes, we had a big library there, good library. And I should try and prepare myself for my first class civil education, which didn't materialise because the war broke out. Because at that stage, that period in time, in Woking, the school, army school, wasn't functioning for some particular reason. This was held at night time, by the way. If you wanted to go for your first, you had to go to like night classes. Well, it wasn't functioning for some particular reason. I don't know why, because the NCOs were still there from the Army Education Corps. They were still... So I used to pick books from the library, logarithms and things like that, mathematics, and try and learn myself, something which I never got when I went to school. Try and advance my own education.
Mm-hmm. As a regimental policeman, did you actually get any more pay?
No. No, you got no pay. The provost sergeant did. The provost sergeant got sixpence a day more than any other sergeant, because I got it when I became provost sergeant. But we never got any extra pay. Some employed men did, cooks. They got extra pay. And I think them were about the only ones. Batmen didn't. The butchers or storemen didn't. I think it was just the cooks. Of course, they had to pass a trades test, the cooks, you see. They had to go to the School of Cookery and pass a test. Probably that's the reason why they got paid and no one else did. As I say, we never got any training.
Okay, thank you. May I ask you what you think the relationship between the people of Woking was and the soldiers in the barracks? Was there any evidence of friction, or did they get on well?
No, I would say that they got on quite well. They blended well with the population. Got to bear in mind that there was only like one regiment there, and they were stationed 2 miles out of Woking. And when they went to town, they went in civilians' clothes. But again, they could be recognised by their haircuts and the way they carried themselves. You never found the bars cluttered up with troops. But I would say, I never heard of any thing other than good relationship. We didn't get any complaints through the police, to us, to the regiment of police about incidents. They're well behaved, the troops, and in turn, so were the civilians, that were well behaved.
Was there any friction at things, places like dances, where of course the soldiers have their uniforms on?
I frequented quite a few dances, and every soldier that I saw seemed to be well attached.
Did that include yourself?
No, I was never attached. Every soldier I remember was well attached to some girl, and therefore that stabilised him. It wasn't a question of a booze up or a brawl. Do we have some dancers fighting for women? Each soldier seemed to have his own girlfriend, and that was it. And the dances went off quite well.
At this stage, you didn't have a girlfriend?
No.
Okay. Shall we move on then from Woking? Can you perhaps introduce us now to the beginnings of the war, and I'll ask you first of all, to what extent were you aware that there would be a war in 1939? Did you feel that there was going to be a war then?
Yes, because the